bang, bro. I do. I do let you bang. Let me bang again, bro. I let you bang. And with that, welcome to Early Stoppage, a show with news of the day. Usually given just the time, but sometimes not enough. If this is your first time stopping by, we thank you and get ready for something you won't find anywhere else. I'm John Franklin, and I'm joined by the God, Father of Fight Night Picks. Craig Allen hasn't yet dropped the gloves. Craig, how are you?
John, I'm well. Listen. It's hockey season, baby, and your Canadians are in the second round. I got a molter. It's all over my shorts. Let's get into it. Hey, we listen. Whoa. We haven't had a show in a couple of weeks. It's been a little bit of time. You know, life goes on. How many brothers fell victim to the streets? That's a good song. But really, life goes on. You move around. And now we're back with Early Stoppage. And listen, I say it just about every time out. I'm so glad to be on the show. I love being on the show. John hates it when I say that. But listen, I absolutely love doing the show. Now, if you see my eyes drift a little bit to the left, it's because your Habs are up 3-1 right now over the Winnipeg Jets. And that's great. So just a little bit of a disclaimer, but I am glad to be here. I'm really looking forward to the show. And I think we got a good one coming up today.
I agree on this episode of Early Stoppage. We talk the return of Tough, Khabib's blessings, and Holland on the move. But we begin, Craig, with the world of celebrity boxing, George St. Pierre and Dana White. Craig, we will get into it with who Dana White has said yes to in recent days. But let's begin with who he said no to. Dana has blocked a fight between pound-for-pound UFC GOAT George St. Pierre and former boxing multi-weight champion and Olympic gold medalist Oscar De La Hoya. Craig, there's a lot of different ways to look at this, but GSP stood to make a lot of money here. So the question is this simply Dana being petty? Is he being a smart businessman here, or is he just being a hater?
I don't know. This one's the really weird move, right? Because put yourself in our shoes 3 or 4 years ago. Your welterweight champion's Tyron Woodley. You're getting excited about him. You're trying to market his fights. And at the same time, you're going out there and saying, this either is or could be the best welterweight, not just on the face of the earth, but this could be the greatest welterweight of all time. Well, it doesn't really matter how Tyron Woodley's career unfolded after that. And we obviously know, you know, in the world of celebrity boxing, especially where our line of questioning is going to go just after this. But the point is, with George St. Pierre, he ended up coming back. He had the fight in 2017 against Michael Bisping. He added to his legacy. He's up here, and every single one of these Canadians games that I watch, there's a commercial for some gambling website with George St. Pierre with hair. And it freaks me out every single time. George has all of these different pursuits. He has, a deal with RDS in French in Canada where he goes on and commentates the fights. He has so much going on right now that it seemed only likely that he would get back into combat sports. If this was his opportunity to get into celebrity boxing, if he had the chance to fight Oscar De La Hoya, people would have tuned in. I don't understand why Dana White decided to block this, but he's allowed other fighters plenty of different opportunities, you know, outside of the UFC. It's definitely a legacy thing, but it is strange. So for me, I mean, maybe he's being a smart businessman to try and protect the brand that is the UFC, but you have to think with the likes of, you know, Paige VanZant and others, not just leaving the company, but going to Bare Knuckle and different organizations, that has to kind of muddy it a little bit. Again, we're talking about the greatest of all time or one of the greatest of all time. But John, the last time I checked, Anderson Silva is one of the greatest of all time. And he's got a fight coming up against Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., one of the lowest of all time. Like, how do you explain him? So yeah, it's a weird move. It is a weird move.
Well, in the world of great transitions and beautiful segues, I'll introduce you to Craig Allen. Craig, I'm going to defer to another greatest of all time, the guy you brought up, Anderson Silva. This is what he said. He said, I think it don't make sense, especially because George did a lot for the sport.
I didn't even see this.
Why you hold the guy? This makes no sense. George is a fighter. You can't hold a fighter. It's the same if you take the lion in the jungle and put him inside the cage. The lion's going to die. You can't do that. Now, here's where this gets interesting for me. We don't exactly know the behind the scenes with GSP and Dana in terms of Dana trying to get GSP back into the cage. We for sure know the background between Dana and Oscar. They do not like each other. Dana is not trying to do Oscar any favors. I just think that the where it gets weird for me is, and again, we don't know what kind of plans Dana's had for GSP. We don't know how difficult GSP's been in helping those plans come to fruition. But I just hate when Dana, or anybody else for that matter, blocks a fighter that they don't have plans with, right? And yeah. And like to give Anderson the okay, to give the person, I mean, obviously it's no secret, the person we're going to talk about next, the okay, it just seems odd. I think Dana is holding on maybe to the GSP-Khabib fight. He's holding on to some other things and doesn't want to diminish GSP's star. But man, I don't know how this would hurt GSP necessarily. I think GSP, I don't know that he would go in there and do as well as Conor did, because I don't know if De La Hoya is smart enough to carry GSP the way Mayweather carried Conor, but I just don't get it. The only thing that makes any sense to me is he's holding on to the hopes that GSP and Khabib will maybe hook it up at some point.
Hey, you know, I'm making all this money, and then I have an opportunity to make life-changing amounts of money to really boost my family, my friends, really help everybody out. And Dana White says, no, no, you Canadian, you stay up there. Now, John, let's move on to a guy from Missouri. And in the last 24 hours, Malki Kawa told MMA Fighting that for Tyron Woodley, and I quote, it's one of the best deals I've ever done. For a guy in his situation, it was a tremendous deal. He's getting a large base number. He's getting a cut of the pay-per-view globally. He's participating in a lot of different things. He should walk away with a multi-million dollar payday. His base guarantee is in the millions already. Add on all the extra stuff. It's a really nice payday. Now, of course, I'm talking about Tyron Woodley. He has an announced fight coming up against the one and only Jake Paul. So, John, is Miz just a player where not only do their basketball programs and football programs get a lot of attention, but the wrestling does. But is this batting practice for the Paul brothers, or is it a good late career move for Tyron Woodley? It's just another odd one, but what's your take here?
You know, here's our first Chael Sonnen reference, and it depends on how you look at this fight as to who's really maximizing this opportunity. Chael says, take the easiest fight for the most money. So, is Jake Paul the easiest fight for the most money for Tyron Woodley? On paper, he is, right? In a boxing ring, maybe not. But I think that, yeah, it's a great career move for him. But do not make Nate Robinson's mistake. Do not make Ben Askren's mistake. Typically, Woodley comes into – the one thing you have to give Woodley, and I guess we could have said this about Askren, even though he's not somebody that's shredded up, is – Tyron Woodley typically shows up on weight, ready to fight, and in shape. So you would assume that he would do that for the Paul fight as well. I think that he's seen enough people sleep on Jake Paul to not make the same mistake. But listen, this kid may be better. He's definitely better than we're giving him credit for. It's just how much better. And one thing that Jake Paul seems to do better than anybody else in combat sports is take fights he knows he can win. And I don't think he would sign with Woodley if there was that much doubt in his mind. So I think it's a good career move for Woodley, but he better beware.
And I mean, I checked out a little bit more on MMA Fighting, and it seems like there's an automatic rematch clause in there for Paul. And the other thing, and you bring it up with the weight, I didn't even think about it, but when you look at the pictures, and we did a little bit of the preamble for the Paul and Askren fight, and I put it up there on the picture, Jake Paul weighs somewhere in the neighborhood of 196 to 198 pounds, right? And Ben Askren on the graphic, well, he put 170 because that's what he weighed his last time out. Now, we saw Funky Ben walk out looking like what? Hot tub of lard. As I would say up here in Canada, he looked like a bag of milk, but he just didn't look like he was in shape. Tyron Woodley notoriously has a hard time cutting to 170. Not to say that he couldn't, even at the end of his UFC run, especially against Vicente Luque's last time out. But if the weight cut's not an issue and we get full bore as the Winnipeg Jets score, and now it's a one-goal game, we get full-bore Tyron Woodley that's ready to go like we did in the Luque fight. This could be a very interesting spot for Paul in the fact that Tyron Woodley's known to box a little bit too. So I think it's a more well-rounded fight, if that can even be said in a boxing fight. But I do think it's a more well-rounded fight. I think it's a more competitive fight than the Robinson fight or the Ben Askren fight. But ultimately, great move for Woodley. What were the other alternatives for him, really? Bellator? PFL? And even then, you're not really guaranteed a lot. So, yeah, good for him.
Yeah, you know, Funky Ben's always kind of been a little chunky Ben. I think he was for real chunky Ben the last time he was out. And I think that Woodley's a guy that swings for the bleachers, just like Paul seems to do. So, I mean, if they both get in there and they have a gentleman's agreement, let's just throw these hands until one of us falls. It could be a hell of a fight. All right, someplace where we typically don't see fights you would call hell of a fights. It's tough. Tough's back. Craig, it's back, and with it comes UFC's foray back into traditional, if there's such a thing, reality TV. So let's talk about a couple of things of note. They're back to working out the fighters as opposed to them sort of fighting their way onto the show. It's 8 middleweights and 8 bantamweights. They're back in Vegas. It's Volkanovski. It's Ortega. So the coaches are setting up a fight that will ultimately happen. The first fight, Andre Petroski defeated Aaron Phillips via submission. Here's the only question of relevance, Craig. Did you watch? If so, why? If not, why?
I mean, last night, Toronto played the Marlins. Like I said, to start the show, I've been watching a lot of hockey and a lot of baseball. So if it is, you know, a Tuesday night, we're getting into the summer. Listen, I can only do so much MMA, and reality shows are not Craig Allen's jam. So we went a little kooky in the week off, and we did a tough bracket challenge. And I was surprised there wasn't a lot in terms of arguments. We had season 1, season 5. We had some of the later seasons. The middle of tough was really where they started to lose some people, and then they just kind of held on to it and kept it going. But for me, I'm not down with this. I'm not. I mean, Dana White's Contender Series sucked the regional scene dry. Yeah, you get Aaron Jeffrey out of Canada, who is a big deal. There are some names in the season. But again, like here's what I'm going to do, John. Look at this weekend's fight card. There's a lot of fringe fighters. I think we can all agree there's a lot of fighters coming off a loss. Manon Fiorot was supposed to fight Marina Moroz. Competitive fight. Fiorot's a big prospect. Well, now Marina Moroz is out, and they bring in a lady who's 5-0. And let me give credit where credit's due. Her name is Tabitha Ricci. Do you know Tabitha Ricci? She's 5-0 in MMA. She's a UFC fighter now. Look at the tough rosters. These are not UFC caliber fighters. So automatically, let's say you win the season, they throw you in. You're set up to fail. I'm not a tough fan. So, I mean, listen, if there's haters out there, maybe you don't like me for saying that. I do not like The Ultimate Fighter. Did you watch the show in your time away? Did you watch it from the beer fridge?
I did. But I will. So, all right, I'll tell you what I was watching, which kind of I'm going to segue what I've been watching into a question about Tough, which is I've been watching this show on the History Channel, which gives like the history of like, you know, Coke versus Pepsi and McDonald's versus Burger King and blah, 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 blah. And it says like the cookie wars and all that shit. So one of the things they said about McDonald's was that they introduced the filet of fish because all these Catholics that didn't eat meat on Fridays, they were having a dip in their sales. So I'm like, oh, that makes sense. They would introduce filet of fish. So my question to you is, what is the demographic for Tough? Like, I mean, are we really holding out? Now, hold on. Are we really holding out the guys are watching Tough with their girlfriends? Like that's what they said 100 years ago. That's what they would say, right? Guys would sit around with their girlfriends and watch Tough, and then the girlfriends would like the reality part of it, and the guys would like the fighting, and it's kind of a date night thing. I don't see, and I don't have my finger on the pulse of the MMA landscape like I once did, but I don't see that as a thing. And now that we have the Contender Series, it's not the only stream for talent to enter the UFC. So what? Who's the demographic here? Who are they? Who are they targeting? It sure as hell ain't me and you.
No, that's a weird thing, right? Like you see some hardcores over on Twitter kind of talk about it a little bit. I know a lot of the hardcores on the Instagram scene, and I didn't even see much from them. Now, again, John, the MMA landscape's in a bit of an odd spot. I made a joke on our Tough show where I said, you know, maybe when you're trying, and it was a part of the fan Q&A, the actual question was, you know, Bellator PFL one championship, how do they overcome or surpass the UFC? I made an offhanded joke, not even that offhanded. I said, go after the Twitter generation, or not the Twitter, go after the TikTok generation. Maybe they'll eat those promotions up. If you can brand yourself and package yourself well enough, hey, totally new demographic, right? Look at the way that the UFC right now is marketed. What are their two big drivers? One, The Ultimate Fighter, and it's gained more traction, I would say, than even this weekend's card between Rozenstruik and Sakai, which is average at best, maybe slightly below average based on name value. I was on Instagram before we started the show, And maybe it was because I followed them. And maybe there's going to be a segment of, not our show, but there's going to be a segment of the show with this exact premise. Big card breaks. I'm pretty sure that's what they're called. These UFC Prism cards. John, how long have UFC cards been around? Forever. Tops had them. Like, they're a pretty tried and true thing. Now, all of a sudden that they're on Panini and there's scarcity involved because the blaster boxes that are normally $25 at your average Walmart are $90. I spent $90 US on one of these friggin' things, and it's on its way. A hobby box is $1,500. Most people can't afford that. I didn't buy one. I can't spend $1,500 on cards, but that's where things are going now. So if you look at it from that way, maybe Tough is a way to kind of entice fans. Hey, watch this. Maybe spend here. Maybe it's not for your hardcore fans that are already bought in, but those who can, you know, fork a little bit more dough, have a little bit more time, have some time during the week. It is tricky though. And I'm curious to know what the age range is too on that demographic.
Yeah, I don't know. Let me ask you a question. This is jumping off topic a little bit, but does it bother you that so many things now are sort of like, what's the word I'm looking for here? They're built. Like when I was a kid, right? They just released baseball cards, and based on the scarcity of the cards and how good the players did, that's what built the baseball card market. But now it's like everything is so calculated, and you see things like people going on Reddit and saying, let's get this stock, and like instead of just things happening organically. Do you like the fact that people are more easily able to hack these markets, or does it sort of take something away from it?
I mean, listen, if you can and you should, check out fightnightpicks.com. We have awesome stuff. I mean, listen, I got popping popcorn shoes here recently. All kinds of great stuff. No, I agree with you to an extent, right? I've been a hockey card, baseball card guy in the past. So I do understand kind of how that works. And I've been entrenched in that that mindset for a while. But I do know what you mean. It would be nice if things happen organically. Like when, and we move on, Khabib Nurmagomedov does an interview with Russian-funded state TV, RT Sport. And he's spoken, John, and he's given our current lightweight champ his blessings. Listen, the quote is, I'm really happy for him because when anyone reaches success, you have to respect that. I think he deserves to be champion. Now, threw a little bit of shade, said that if Michael Chandler got the belt with only 2 wins in the UFC, that wouldn't have been, you know, the best thing in the world. But all of this is based on Charles Oliveira's road to gold. So, John, does this win and does what Khabib has now said, does that win fans over in the fact that Khabib kind of gave him this blessing?
I don't think the blessing is going to win them over. I think that, you know, if Khabib really gave a shit to give Olives the true blessing and give him the push and give him the, you know, put him over with everybody, he would have said, this is the guy that I think would have given me the best fight. I mean, listen, if you're retired, you can say whatever you want. I mean, you know, the reality is that, you know, either one of two things, either you completely just dismantle the guy as a person and as an athlete and say, he's lucky I retired when I did because I would have ran through him like everybody else. And that would promote a fight. Or you give him the shine and that promotes the fight. I think either or would have helped him out. I think what he said was it didn't quite go far enough to give Oliveras the shine to really make him a big superstar. But in reality, that's not what makes people big superstars anyway. So he takes out Chandler, start throwing savages at this guy. And if he keeps taking him out, then that's where it'll come from. I really don't think Khabib has it in him to boost a fighter in that way.
Listen, John, and it is tough to kind of do two things at once and multitask, but Mark Scheifele's losing his absolute mind for your Winnipeg Jets. Looks like he just threw Ben Sherratt to the ground, kind of pushed his skull into the ice. Wild stuff happening. But John, with Charles Oliveira, yeah, he's done this on merit. And yes, again, were the first 6 wins, 7 wins, were they really the best wins that you could have? No, but once you beat Ferguson by decision like he did, once you beat Chandler, once you really start to beat those top-level guys, I think the fans definitely realize how good of a star and how good of a fighter he actually is. So it is nice to see that the former champ said this, but you're right. He didn't really say anything to kind of put him over with a lot of people. This was great. You're great. Didn't allude to any comebacks. I guess we're not going to see any, you know, footage of Dana White walking him into a room somewhere. teasing a comeback. But yeah, listen, nice to see that he said that. And who knows, if Chandler won, we'd be in a totally different position.
I mean, Jesus, can Dana buy this guy a couple more dinners, for Christ's sakes, that go nowhere and mean nothing? Speaking of guys that are kind of in business together, let's talk about John Jones and Richard Schaefer. Craig, to those who are unfamiliar, Richard Schaefer is the former Golden Boy CEO, and John Jones has enlisted him to help with his negotiations with the UFC. Schaefer has said he has one task, and that's to deliver the Francis Ngannou fight. Dana has said Schaefer is a very capable deal maker, which, listen, anybody affiliated with Golden Boy that Dana gives a compliment to has to be a good thing, right? So, Craig, what say you? Do you think Richard Schaefer changes things for John Jones?
I think it's better than having, like, Steven Espinoza trying to negotiate on your behalf. Fair enough. Listen, it can't hurt. The one thing that really questions me out of this entire situation is you hire Schaefer, and then the news out of the camp is, yeah, he'll wait till 2022. Why? Like, what? You know, you're in a different location this week, right? You are. It's not your average everyday, you know, bunker that you have. And I can't hear the planes and the dogs barking. No, but you're in a different location. I'm still stuck here because we have rules. But eventually, this too shall pass and I'll be able to travel once again. So with all that in mind and with fans in the stands, why would you wait until 2022? Why not get people and strike while the iron's hot and try and get a crowd full and try and get an arena full of people that are excited for a John Jones Ngannou fight rather than wait for another year? People have the money right now to spend on it. Why wouldn't you go after it now? I don't understand it. I really don't. I think Schaefer does change things, but I think the waiting game is just silly.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that, you know, Dana complimenting him means that he's willing to play ball with him, so that's good. But I think that, you know, again, here's our second Chael reference. Chael said something a couple weeks ago, maybe a month ago, about John Jones, which was, he said, I hope he likes lifting weights because he looks like he's prepared to do it for a while because he doesn't seem to have any urgency to get in the cage and let everybody know he's the best fighter in the world. And this might be a ploy on John Jones's part to raise his dollar number, but I'm with Chael. I mean, every day that this guy lifts weights, he loses another day of his prime. And that doesn't mean that when he comes back, he's not going to be a stud. And one thing that I will say that I really like about John Jones's training, to give him credit, is, and listen, when you start giving a shit what guys put on Instagram or Twitter or whatever, you know, it's a dangerous game to play. But I did like that he's bulking up, but I saw him doing some sprints and I saw him trying to keep his speed up, so that at that weight, he's still a fast fighter, which is a good thing. So, or maybe he's just trying to convince us that that's what he's doing. Who knows? I think the Schaefer thing makes a big difference. But, you know, to say that Golden Boy, former Golden Boy CEO Richard Schaefer can get all kinds of things done. Well, listen, he got Chuck and Tito done. And where the hell did that get us? So I think that we need to take this all with a grain of salt and say, I believe, Richard Schaefer, Dana White, Jesus Christ himself, whoever's involved. When John Jones wants to fight, he's going to get his ass in the cage for whatever the number is.
We got to go back for a second. You, sir, have to thank Richard Schaefer, because were you not in attendance for that?
I was.
Was it a highlight or a low light of your life?
A little bit of both. It was bittersweet. It was my first time at the Forum, which was a nice venue. But I was there to watch those two assholes fight. So there you go.
Fair enough. All right. We'll move on from one tall, skinny guy to another on the socials. And we're not just talking about Matt Allen in a plaid shirt. John, Kevin Holland's posting on the socials with pics of himself and Deron Wynn at AKA. Obviously, on paper, this is a good move. It seems like he's taking Daniel Cormier up on the offer. But how long is it going to take Kevin Holland to just dedicate himself to the wrestling and grappling until we actually see this payoff?
You know, I've always liked Kevin Holland, and I think that I try not to get too bogged down with all the extra stuff. You know, I have very famously said the difference between Kevin Holland and all these other, gold medal, world-class shit talkers is that those guys did it out of the cage and got to business in the cage, and Kevin Holland keeps talking shit when he gets in the cage, and that's usually a recipe for disaster. I think that if you never mind the fact that they have a wrestling pedigree, which Kevin Holland definitely could use some help with. But I just think AKA, they really get after it. And I think that there's a mindset at that gym. There's a championship mindset at that gym. And when you walk in there, it's not like, and we talked about this a month ago or 2 months ago. Is Travis Luter the guy to put Kevin Holland in check or not? And I'm not saying that this is an abandonment of Travis Luter, but I do think it's Kevin Holland acknowledging that I need someone to kick me in the ass, and they got a bunch of ass kickers over at AKA. So I do think at least he's self-aware enough to know this is what I suck at. And, you know, a long time ago when I used to do these podcasts with other people, you know, 100 years ago, we would talk about stuff like, where should Ronda Rousey go to improve her hands? Because it damn sure ain't Edmund Tarverian, you know? So the question was, should she go to AKA? I mean, it's the American Kickboxing Academy. It's not that far from where she is. So I think that at least this kid is self-aware enough to know where his feet should be planted to fix what ails him. The question is, can he pull it off? I tend to think he can.
I mean, listen, so do you have that Tubi app on your phone?
I don't think so.
But it's like free TV, but it's old stuff, and they mix in commercials, right? So yes. I was on there one night. You know, you get tired of Prime, you get tired of Disney, you're laying in bed, why not? So I'm flipping through, and among all the oddities, there's Cain Velasquez's face. And I thought, hey, fuck it. 2014, let's click on it. Did you watch Fight Factory when it came out?
I think I did.
Yeah, and they tried to, like, revamp Phil Baroni's career, and they're like, he's not meant to be at the gym, but come on to the gym, and this guy's a fighter. And now Phil Baroni, who's probably going to see this clip, and Phil, I wish you nothing but the best, still tweets about it to this day. John, hopefully Kevin Holland goes to Fight Factory, a.k.a. American Kickboxing Academy, pun intended, and he's able to actually get something out of this. So hopefully this does pay off, but yeah, it's, you know, you don't earn a degree in wrestling all that quickly. You just don't. So for Kevin Holland, hopefully it works out. Again, recently given his black belt by the Michael Jordan of grappling, Travis Luter. So again, wish nothing but the best for Michael Goldberg, who's currently not with Bellator anymore and came up with that saying, but also to Kevin Holland too, because the guy's definitely a talent, and middleweight without him competing once every other weekend really just kind of sucks.
This to me has like post-game press conference vibes. Like this should say Dunkin' Donuts, not Cleveland Browns.
Remember when you made fun of me and said that I would look like a special teams coach when I wore my Cleveland Browns like quarter zip?
I do remember that, yeah.
Screw you. You should have it this week.
Screw me. I should. All right, and we move on to sparring sessions, Craig. Daniel Cormier said after Carla Esparza's most recent win that she's earned a title shot. We don't always get what we want. Now, the sparring session isn't really, is he right? Because I think we can agree that he's right. But I guess my question is, you know, do you think Esparza's earned a title shot? Do you think that Cormier saying it is, you know, Cormier tends to be like a UFC company man, a gatekeeper. Is he speaking, you know, this is a horrible image, but, you know, is someone's hand up his ass and they're puppeteering him? Or what do you think here? Do you think that Esparza should get a title shot?
Sometimes I get weird vibes off of some of the ESPN programming because, again, they're kind of hand in hand for the most part. So, yeah, I would take it with a little bit of a grain of salt. Dana White, after that whole night of fights, seemed pretty non-committal on the co-main event, on the main event. Who's Oliveira going to get next? I don't really know. You know, who's Esparza going to get next? Does she deserve a title shot? We'll have to see how things play out. So to me, Daniel Cormier is just kind of towing the line, like you said. But you look at some of the matchups that we're going to get shortly, and there's some that are head scratchers. For Esparza, it would be a head scratcher to me if she ended up with a fight with, say, like a Mackenzie Dern or a Zhang Wei Li and not Rose Namajunas. So listen, I understand what Daniel Cormier is saying. I mean, think of it, if you're Islam Makhachev and you beat Drew Dober and you beat him in such a way where you take him down, you thrash him, you get a win by finish. Ideally, who would Islam Makhachev fight? This is a Daniel Cormier guy too, right? Keep that in mind. You would think he would get Dos Anjos. They were originally paired up in a main event. It was supposed to be five rounds. Makhachev couldn't make it. Now he's getting Thiago Moises. So the juice maybe not always worth the squeeze with big wins like that. But yeah, hope nothing but the best for Esparza. And Jake Evans just got fucking decked. He's hurt. Oh my God, that was bad.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about this in terms of who's the person that really needs to get this title shot, right? We've advocated for different people. Here's what I'm looking at. I'm looking at six wins, or I'm looking at five wins in a row. I'm looking at Jandaroba, Alexa Grasso, Watterson, Marina Rodriguez, Jian Yan Yan. I mean, that's a pretty impressive group there. Couple splits in there. She's a former champion. I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing the fight. I think that, you know, it's – I like it. I like Carla Esparza. You know, you and I talk in the past about, you know, I think I might have talked to you about this before with Brian Grazer, the guy who does Imagine Entertainment, talks about perishable moments, right? We've had this conversation before about Cody Garbrandt. Cody Garbrandt's a perishable fighter, right? We have the clock's ticking on him. I think you can make a case that Carlos Esparza is a perishable fighter and that we only have so much time. The expiration date is maybe closer than a lot of other fighters. I figure you run her out there one more time. When people get on a run, I think you got to capitalize on the run. You know, in the promos, you say five wins in a row, you pump her up the way she needs to be pumped up, and then you get out there. So for me, I say give her the title shot. I do think that that Cormier is kind of serves as a dam sometimes for Dana White and kind of holds some of the water back. And Anik does as well. And Rogan does as well. There are guys. Felder doesn't really do it. Cruz doesn't really do it. But Anik, Cormier, and Rogan kind of key sometimes will co-sign on whatever they think or they've heard Dana White say. So Cormier pumping the brakes probably isn't good news for Carla Esparza, but I do think she should get the title shot.
Yeah, sorry for kind of checking out there, but if anybody saw that hit on John Tavares at the start of the playoffs, like I felt sick watching that. Jake Evans just scored on an empty net to go up two goals, and Mark Scheifele absolutely took his head off, and Evans is down. Man, that's scary stuff. All right, John. So we move on from sparring sessions, and I got to kind of pick this up because I put down five silly goose questions. It's time for hitting the speed bag. And if this is the first time that you've tuned in to the show, then listen, you're in for a treat. John has not seen these questions whatsoever. They have some but little relevance to MMA. And it's definitely the worst part for him because automatically his anxiety kicks in. John, are you ready?
As ready as I could possibly be.
All right, so I'm going to start the timer after I ask the first question, and I start now. John, we're in the swing
really
of
quick,
boxing basketball.
Before you start the timer, my favorite part of this is always how dedicated you are to there being a timer.
Okay.
But go ahead.
John, we're in the swing of hockey and basketball playoffs, if you didn't know. So I put out a poll today. And it reads, mixing MMA and other sports in terms of analogies, yay or nay? 66.1% say love them. 33.9% say hate them. Question is, I want your most obscure MMA name and the most obscure baseball player that you can think of.
Obscure MMA fighter would be... Jesus, who's that guy?
Exactly.
I can't even think of Joe Riggs is my most obscure, who everybody
main
knows.
Zone, Diesel Joe Riggs. Good pick.
My most obscure, would you say baseball?
Yeah.
My most obscure baseball player, Otis Nixon.
Otis Nixon. I like it. I was going to go with Hank Blaylock myself. Paul versus Mayweather's this weekend. Paul versus Woodley is sooner than later. Give me your favorite Paul and who he or she could beat in a fight for money.
My favorite Paul is Paul Newman and, or Paul Sorvino. Who could they beat in a fight? Paul Newman, I'd like to see fight at 55. I think he'd be good at 55 in his prime. And I'd like to see him fight Gaethje. I don't think he could beat Gaethje. I'd like to see him fight Barbarina. I'd like to see Paul Newman fight Brian Barbarina. Listen, ask a crazy question, get a crazy answer.
All right, John, it's a travel week for you, and this week we all want to know, do you carry on or do you check your bag?
I check two bags and carried on a backpack.
You're a good man. I like that. All right. 42 years, 9 months, 1 week, and 5 days. That will be Francisco Trinaldo's age going into this weekend's UFC Fight Night card. Give me three fighters older than that who've competed in the UFC.
Randy Couture. Dan Henderson.
Yep.
And I don't think Teixeira is older than that, is he? It'll be close.
No, they're close.
Who's older than that? How old was James Toney when he fought Randy Couture?
That's a good question. I don't know that one.
That's what I got. I got Couture, Hendo, and that's it.
What about a guy that just signed with Bellator?
Who?
Yoel Romero.
Yeah.
I've got Verdum, Maya, Severn, Olenek, Romero, Renault, Little Nog, Mark Coleman, Anderson Silva.
Yeah.
All fun names.
Little and Big Nog. They're my age. Yep.
John, last question. Usman, Kamaru Usman. He's set to hop onto Hot Ones tomorrow, and I won't bore you like the episode most likely will bore a lot of people, but I'll ask you this. Tingle the lips, medium or hot wings? What do you like?
Medium.
Yeah, that's fair. I do too. All right, that's hitting the speed bag.
All right, and we move on. Let's get to the social stuff. Let's start with For the Gram. Craig, let's talk about Michael Page. Michael Page was quoted this week saying, "I enjoy Bellator, but I definitely feel like I need to touch the UFC at some point." This sounds eerily to me like what Justin Gaethje was saying before he signed with the UFC. Do you think that this is just Paige sort of talking out loud, and most people talk out loud, but just thinking out loud, or do you think that there's something, is it a negotiating ploy? Do you think he's on his way out? And by extension to the question, do you think Bellator should just say, listen, we can't give this guy the fights that he needs. Let's let him go.
They can, though. They could have him fight Logan Storley. They could have him fight Lorenz Larkin. They could have him fight Yaroslav Amosov, but they don't. Now, I know Amosov's going to probably, or he has ended up fighting Lima, but you look at Page, his only loss is to Lima, the best fighter that he's fought. Like, they consistently give him the Derek Andersons of the world, the Shinjo Angais of the world, guys that he's going to be able to beat. And what does he do? He beats him in emphatic fashion. So it's a little bit of his manager, Bellator, and Michael Venom Page. They're kind of in their own way at this point because they want that human highlight reel. But again, MVP, what is he? Just slightly over 30, mid-30s, something like that. I mean, Raymond Daniels is still athletic as hell, and he's over 40 and looking pretty good in MMA. So listen, could it happen? Yeah, I'd be all for it. But listen, if he continues to crush cans, as they say, and that's just as the kids say on the streets, then I'd be fine with that too.
You know, I guess when I look at a guy like Michael Venom Page, it's like, it's not a sports analogy for you guys. It's a car analogy. I mean, you got a great car. The car goes fast, but it's in your garage. What the hell's the point? Cars aren't meant for garages. They're meant for roads. So get out, open it up. Let's see what this kid can do. And put him in there with all the guys you talked about. I'd love to say I knew who the fuck they were, but they fight for Bellator. So, you know, listen. But I mean, if these are the guys you think he should fight, I trust you. All right? Put him in there with them. Let's get this guy out on the open road. Let's put the pedal to the metal, and let's see what this kid can do. Let's get into it. We move on to one Twitter hitter. Craig, Luke Rockhold has said that there's a lot of guys – but none of them want to sign the contract. He went on to say Uriah Hall was an option. He didn't want to fight. Kevin Holland was an option. Didn't want to fight. Darren Till was thrown around. Didn't get the fight. Paulo Costa, Marvin Vettori, all these names that seem to swirl around Luke Rockhold, and none of these fights can get made. One, why do you think that is? And two, do you think Rockhold has a legitimate beef here? Should he be getting those level of fights?
Well, it's weird, right? Because, I mean, the first name that pops into my head, you've got Jan Blachowicz, who beats Luke Rockhold and then keeps kind of moving up the ladder. And then all of a sudden he's champ. And then you look at another fighter like Dominic Reyes and he beats Chris Weidman, who's up a weight class emphatically. And then he gets a title shot and fights the fight of his life. And people think you beat John Jones and so on and so forth. So for a fighter like a Uriah Hall, like a Darren Till, maybe Luke Rockhold could be a stepping stone like that. But why not go the traditional route and fight ranked opponents that are close to you, if not higher in the standings? So I understand why fighters would turn down a fight with Luke Rockhold. It's a risky fight. Is he defensively maybe not the most sound fighter? Sure, but he's still dangerous. And, a loss to Rockhold would really, really sting for a lot of those guys. So I understand why they would turn down fights. And if you're Luke Rockhold, you would expect a ranked fighter, I'm assuming. But why not aim for like the 10 to 15 category? Why are we going after these top 10 guys?
Well, I just think that he wants to remain relevant. I'm with you. I think that it depends on how you look at it. If you look at losses to Romero and Blachowicz as he's punchy and his chin's going, that's one way you could look at it. Or you could say, like you said, Blachowicz is a champion now. Romero is, he's moved on, but he still seems like a game fighter. He was fighting for championships not that long ago. So it depends on how much you rate the guys that he's beating or that are beating him. So for me, these fighters seem to have this weird middle area where it's like they're in their prime, then they have a little bit of space, and then they start to get on their Dan Henderson thing where they're like late in their career, Shogun, where they still got a lot of pop. They can still be dangerous, but they can't bring it every time out. I think he's in that world. But listen, I think that if you are a former champion and you want to call out big names and run the risk of getting turned into a put on their highlight reel, then so be it. Let the guy have the resume on his name, and let's see what this guy still has. All right, speaking of Luke Rockhold and former opponents, let's move on to posting to the book. I want to talk about Chris Weidman and the fact that he's already kind of walking on his own under his own power, or however you want to call it. He seems to be putting that vibe out there. He's doing interviews. What do you think about all this? Do you think he's like just setting the table for some miraculous ESPN story that leads to him getting back in the cage? And one, what does that do for his career? Two, I mean, do we need to see him back in the cage? Because once that happened, people were just happy to put him out to pasture. But now it seems like he's turning into this feel-good story, and it's inevitable he's going to be back in the cage.
I mean, the guy snapped his leg in two. What do I know? Like, I was playing hockey, and I broke my my forearm right there, and then I broke it right there, too. So I ended up in a cast. It was definitely a hindrance in terms of schooling and university. And then I'm an idiot, and I tried to do the Chris Weidman. So I went out, and I started throwing a baseball with a cast still on, and then I threw my shoulder out of line, and now my shoulder's still messed up, and we're years later. For Chris Weidman, circumstances are different, definitely different. He's a professional athlete, and I'm a dink. But you look at this, and I mean, listen, good for him. His goal is definitely to get back into fighting shape. And what better of a goal for a guy that's in his late 30s, that's been there and done that, than, you know, the carrot dangling out in front of him of an opportunity to walk back into the octagon. So credit where it's due. I mean, what did he have? I don't even know how that works, like the zero gravity treadmill that he was on like a week ago. And then you see it on, I saw it on Twitter where he was walking around his kitchen pretty quickly. But listen, good for him. I wish him nothing but the best in his recovery. And it was neat to see him start to throw leg kicks in that Hall fight. And that's not a joke. Like, hey, a little bit of an added wrinkle. But all of this to say, I don't know if we really need to see Chris Weidman against that upper echelon of talent, but if this is a way for him to get back in terms of his rehab, then great. You love to see it for that reason.
All right, let's move on to finish strong, and then we'll do start the conversation, and we'll do finish strong. So one thing I want to touch on, which we touched on earlier, and we may have covered it earlier, but I want to sort of reopen it and start the conversation here. This whole business about who Dana's saying yes to and who Dana's saying no to, as far as these extracurricular activities, these side hustles, whatever you want to call them, these exhibition boxing matches. You know, Anderson gets a yes, and Woodley gets a yes, and GSP gets a no. Do you think it has more to do with the person who's asking, Woodley, Silva, GSP, or the person they're fighting. Paul, Cesar Chavez, De La Hoya. What do you think the ultimate determining factor is for Dana on whether or not he gives the okay to letting someone venture out? Connor obviously went to go fight Floyd. Askren was allowed to fight Paul. I'm assuming these guys are somewhat still under contract. GSP is, you know, and guys, you're going to jump in the comments no matter what the fuck I say. But if you know, one guy was out of a contract and the other guy's still in it, I get it. My point is that Dana has blessed certain fighters in certain matchups and not blessed others. So what are your thoughts on why that happens?
You know, it's an interesting way to put it that way. And it wasn't something that I thought about at the start of the show because, listen, we all remember, what was it, 2 years ago? Well, when did you actually go to the forum? How long ago was that?
Wow, what was it, 2018 maybe? 2019?
Yeah, so two, three years ago, whatever it was. But we all remember when, you know, a man that grew up in the Northeast, not unlike myself, just on the Canadian side, and he graced the airways of the United States of America by saying, "You can't just say that kind of stuff on ESPN." And he'd go on every single show he could, and he would say that. And who is it about? Oscar De La Hoya. So I think, you know, to lend a bit of credence to the question, if George St. Pierre came out and he decided that he wanted to box, I don't know, Keith Thurman, or I don't know, pick your boxer. I don't really know any middling boxers. Liam Smith. I'm just trying to pick some names here. Not the biggest boxing guy. But if he picked somebody that was halfway relevant, that would have been a competitive fight, that would have made sense from a marketing perspective, sure. But I think, yeah, you know, where it was an Oscar De La Hoya, that one's off limits. And if you were to ask and package it in a different format, then maybe we would see a GSP boxing fight. But yeah, De La Hoya is definitely a no-go. I know Cesar Chavez, as you and I joke about it, it's just a weird one for Anderson Silva. But yeah, you know, you look at the Paul brothers, you look at Mayweather, that's guaranteed money, and it's a win-win for both sides. But yeah, the De La Hoya thing's a little bit weird. So I don't know if it has as much to do with the fighter in question that fought for the UFC or the MMA fighter. I think it does have to do a little bit with matching an opponent as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think, listen, the GSP thing was dead on arrival. I mean, that was – here's a guy who kind of, you know, won the 85 belt, held it hostage. Listen, trust me, guys, I'm the biggest
GSP. Not that long.
Well, no, but hold on. Here's my point, is that I guarantee you that Dana wanted GSP to defend that belt. And there was probably some talk that he might. And GSP probably knew that he wasn't going to defend it. So, you know, I think that there's that. There's him wanting to fight Anderson. You know, GSP isn't the most willing partner that the UFC's ever had. And De La Hoya is a flat-out enemy. So with you, those two guys coming to Dana, it's like, you know, I'm a teacher. If the two kids with the worst behavior problems come up to me when I'm sitting at my desk and ask me if we can watch a movie that day, I'm like, you guys sent the wrong two up here to watch a movie. You got the wrong messengers. And I think that's, these two were never going to happen. You couldn't. Now, and here's the other part of it too. It would have been a huge fight, like a huge fight. It might have done. Let me catch myself here, but I'll say it. It might have done better numbers than Mayweather and McGregor. I mean, those guys were in their prime when they did their numbers, but man, GSP and De La Hoya, that's about as good as you're going to get this side of McGregor, Mayweather. All right, Craig, let's finish strong. I want to start because what we're going to do here is mostly fight announcements. I'm going to run through the last 5 or 6 days. You tell me what you like, what you don't like. There's not a lot here, but here's my question for you. Do you have any interest in Sanchez, Fabia? I mean, it continues. 1 minute they're at odds with the UFC. Now they're at odds with each other. You have no interest in any of it.
No. You know, just kind of like, what was it? Love thy enemy. Is that what Diego Sanchez said today? Something along those lines. Listen, you know, if he's letting bygones be bygones, then that's cool. But yeah, you talk about those guys, you suck the air right out of the room.
You know, and one thing I will say that I do like about the situation is that if they're parting ways, maybe Diego will reunite with some of the people that have been supporting him through this process. Some ex-teammates, some guys.
Get back in the UFC.
Get back in the good graces. All right. I got Kayla Harrison and Cindy Dandois. How are you feeling about it?
Not good, John. Not good. Not good. That's Cindy Dandois looked bad in her last fight, and Kayla Harrison continues to mop the floor over with PFL. So I'm not excited about it.
Verdun and Brandon Sales, anything there?
Fight's off. It was just announced that the fight was off tonight, right before we came on. I just saw it as news. Sorry.
That's fine. Yancy Medeiros, Demir Had.
Rebooking. But I'm cool with it. That's a good fight.
Michelle Pereira, Nico Price.
That's a banger.
That's got you. That's a two thumbs up, pop and popcorn, all of it.
That's a good fight.
Dillashaw, Sandhagen. Is it Sandhagen, Sondhagen? No. Corey Sandhagen, TJ Dillashaw, July 24th. I mean, we liked it before, we like it now, right?
Yeah, that's a great fight. Your Vegas Golden Knights just scored to make it 1-1 against Colorado Avalanche, so we're going to toss that cap on. What do you make of, like, a Sean Strickland, Uriah Hall?
I'm fine with it. I'm not over the moon about it, but, you know, I like to watch Uriah Hall fight.
What about Hot Chocolate Danny Roberts and Tim Means?
I like that fight. I do. I like that fight.
Okay, what about Nicolas Stutz and Munir Lazez?
I could take it or leave it.
Ryan Hall, Ilya Topuria?
I like that one. Finally, somebody's not scared of the boogeyman.
Jalen Turner and Uroš Medić.
That's all right. I like watching Turner fight.
Yeah, well, Joe Rogan gave Medić the bump after the end of his last fight. Last one I'll give you. Sean Brady. Did you see this? He's a Philly guy. Philly guy. He's taking on Kevin Lee at 170 pounds.
I like that fight.
All right. So do I. Jose Aldo, Pedro Munhoz. That's a good one, too. All right. Charles Roldan's taking on Lerone Murphy. Marc-Andre Berrios taking on Dalcha Lunjubula. I can go all day.
So maybe I'm missing out on these. Holloway, Yair Rodriguez. Did we ever talk about that?
No, we haven't. Hell of a fight.
What about Pico
Duho
and Aiden?
Choi, Danny Chavez.
Pico and Aaron and Aiden Lee.
That's a great fight. Aiden Lee is an awesome grappler, and he trains at a Team Renegade BJJ with the Edwards brothers and Tom Breeze, who's fighting this weekend. Like, that's a good fight.
What do you think about this whole pumping of the brakes with Aaron Pico? Do you think that the way that they've kind of refocused, like burying him a little bit, not making him as big of a star, as big of a deal as they did before, do you think that's going to lead to him actually having a career? Or do you think if he was going to be legit, he'd have been legit by now?
You know, we joked about it before with Michael Venom Page and being a British guy like Aiden Lee is, but where he's fought Cans and Shinjo Anjai, it's a joke because what's his nickname? Like the Fisherman? He fought in the UFC, but he wasn't very good. Aiden Lee's not a can. Like, Aiden Lee's a competent fighter. I've seen him put on good fights over with Cage Warriors. So a fight like that with Aaron Pico, it's big for both guys. And I think if Aaron Pico wins that fight, it kind of gains him a little bit more credibility. So he's not just like the American that can box or the American that can wrestler. All of a sudden you gain a little bit more of a European audience if you pick up a win there. I think that's a really important fight. And for Aiden Lee, well, vice versa. If you can submit the American in a fight like that, boom, goes the dynamite. Bob's your uncle and whatever other cliche you want to throw out there. And if you want to see his submission, my guy, Kyung Ho Kong, is going to be taking on my other guy, Ronnie Yaya. I can't wait for that fight.
Quick prediction, long term. Is Aaron Pico ever fighting the UFC, and how does he get there?
No, he's a Bellator guy.
So you mean they'll never let him go, or he'll never?
No, it's kind of like that. Now it's really, I can't even remember.
Never let you go. Beep, boop. Yeah, he's in a weird spot because you can't. For him to have to fight so poorly for them to let him go, then why the hell would the UFC want him? So unless he just says, I'm not signing the next contract, I think that, he's there for good. All right, guys, there you have it. Third eye blind. All right, guys, there you have it. Early stoppage is in the books. Craig can be followed at Craig Allen FNP. I can be followed at SM Corner Man. The fight has been stopped. We'll see you next week. Craig, say something witty.
Go, Habs, go. Let's get into it.
Go, Habs, go.